This is David Williams from the Health Business Blog. I'm speaking today with Juliette Kayyem, candidate for governor. Juliette, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, David.
Juliette, does Chapter 224 represent the right approach to addressing rising healthcare costs? And if not, where does it miss the mark and what would you do differently?
Oh, I think it's absolutely the right approach in terms of Massachusetts being sort of the first state to try to, you know, crack the nut, right, of rising healthcare costs. And it's a great start, though. And you know, if people who see me on the trail say, you know, we're never done. There's no finish line. We just keep pushing. And the legislation is that start to continue and strengthen our efforts. And also, you know, whether it's through transparency, whether it's through causes of action against healthcare industries, whether it's through, you know, capping healthcare costs. But while it is a great start, and there's no way that we can think that we're done with the challenge of healthcare, both in terms of the burden it's placing on our state budget, but also in terms of looking at other ways to relieve a healthcare system that's under stress. So I am, you know, on the trail a lot, and part of my campaign, and maybe also as a mother, is to really focus also on public health issues, because if you think about the biggest cost of the healthcare system, it's individuals with chronic and yet preventable illnesses, you know, whether it's diabetes or obesity or congestive heart failure. So there are things that we can do on the front end to relieve the burdens that we're addressing in Chapter 224.
Juliette, there are certain provider systems in Massachusetts that are reimbursed significantly more than others for the same services, even though there are virtually no differences in quality. Mm-hmm. Do you think the state has a part to play in addressing these disparities?
Yeah, I do. And I think part of, you know, part of what the state is doing in terms of transparency, in terms of billing and financing, is a start. And anyone who's in the system and certainly has children or family members in the system knows that those bills that you get that actually say this is not a bill, you know, those ones that you get in the mail are like completely incomprehensible to the average person, even someone running for governor. So I do think there's more that the state can do, but also realize that it's a competitive field and that there are going to be limitations to what the market can correct, right? So that, you know, I think transparency is good. I think that litigating or having causes of action against abuses is good. And then let the market begin to drive some better behavior, which I do believe it will.
There are more than a dozen state agencies that have a role in healthcare. Is there an opportunity to consolidate or rationalize them?
Oh, yes. That is anyone. I have been in state government and executive role. I've been in federal government. I'm actually the only candidate who's been in both. There is no question that rationalizing and consolidating them is important. I've done that in the past in state government, whether it was, you know, in my space, which was Homeland Security, but that also, to be honest, had a lot to do with healthcare preparedness, right? And public health preparedness as we were looking at SARS at the time, but certainly when H1N1 came down. So look, I mean, we are a home rule state with 351 cities and towns, and then each of them has, you know, healthcare leaders. Each of them has NGOs working in the space, private facilities, lots of players, and that we need to work through all of those different layers to ensure that agencies are working together. And so I think, you know, what we need to do, what the new governor needs to do, is to see, can the delivery of services become more efficient? That doesn't necessarily mean a czar in the governor's office or whatever. It means, you know, are we, state government, more transparent for not just the patients, but for other government entities who are clearly much more intimate in this space?
You mentioned working both in the federal and the state government. Well, both the federal and state government policy has encouraged adoption of electronic medical records. However, there are many providers that complain about the systems, and some of the benefits have been slow to materialize. Do you think that state government should play a role in helping to realize the promise of health information technology?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, look, if you... Nothing happens in a day. I'm pretty honest about that in the on the campaign trail. I'll be honest about that in government. I mean, just think about the anniversary we just celebrated. Facebook 10 years ago was founded, and in that decade, the way we just manage data has fundamentally changed. If you just think of sort of Dropbox and Facebook, have shown, that cloud-based data storage is really a viable option for both private and public data, with all sorts of complications. I'm not washing over it, but with all sorts of complications. Medical data is the most private and therefore must be the most secure. So it seems it's understandable that medical records have taken some time to catch up. But I think the state can do a lot to encourage hospitals to sort of adopt and invent these new storage protocols and transfer protocols while protecting privacy. And I think this is eminently doable with state government, both providing the best practices, the R&D, and the support for private and public hospitals to do this. In the next 10 or 20 years, the next couple years, this will begin to come to fruition.
Hepatitis C is three or four times more common than HIV. There are new drugs that can cure the infection that are coming on the market this year, but they're very expensive. What role should the state play in ensuring that residents are tested, linked to care, and have access to these new medications?
Right. So, I mean, and that question is, different pieces of the trajectory of hepatitis C. I mean, in my experience in this, not being a doctor, right, in the space or in the healthcare space, is really when I was in the federal government and a response to what was then, the H1N1 outbreak, and sort of realizing the challenges of drug distribution, in that case a vaccine, and the challenges of getting it to the most, what we call the last mile, right? We can make things, we can buy them in bulk, we can get them down the to the right hospitals or community health centers, but can we get them actually to individuals? So I'm committed to finding ways in which we can do, what we call that last mile, which is the most important. We have been, though, as a state, at the forefront, really, of advocating and pushing for access to affordable health care, and that, hepatitis really is no different. And so we need to look at, can the 97% that are covered, how can they access the very expensive drugs? But as importantly, maybe most importantly, is also look at prevention of hepatitis C, because that's only going to occur with strong public health education programs and strong commitment to community health centers and other public education providers that are out in communities helping people live healthier lives.
Juliet, there are multiple healthcare-related ballot questions. What are your thoughts about them?
So as a general rule, I'm just saying, and people know this about me, and I think probably most politicians are that way. Ballot initiatives, I prefer going through the legislature. Why is that? Because ballot initiatives tend to be very, don't allow for the kind of negotiations that are often required for proper implementation. That being said, both the fixed nurse patient staffing ratios and the limit hospital, I would support those if they were passed by the citizens of the state. I'm not going to oppose them. On the other hand, I would also like to work with the nurses union, with hospitals and others to get the legislation that is necessary to ensure that nurses have adequate staffing levels and whatever other legislation might be appropriate for this space.
In your campaign platform, you talk about reducing health disparities in the Bay State's underprivileged communities. Are there specific steps you have in mind to achieve this?
Yes. I mean, I think for someone like me and people who don't know me, I've worked in Homeland Security, which tends to, we think of it in terms of safety and security and terrorism and hurricanes, but really what it is about is buttressing preparedness and through our various systems that protect people, and that includes public health and a citizen's health. And as I've mentioned before, I've done that in the spaces of threats that come from viruses that we don't have vaccines for example, H1N1. But they really, when you think about any crisis or any disaster that hits a community, the burdens on public health and the health community are equally felt. It's not just a police issue or fire issue. We could think of any, you know, disaster with Mother Nature. So I am committed to buttressing public health preparedness, because I think not only is that good for all communities, but I think in actually areas where there are underprivileged communities, it is, I keep going back to these words, the, you know, for example, the community health centers are really the most, you know, intimate of the relationship between a patient and a community to health and healthy living. So I want to do more in terms of support. I mean, one of our greatest tools, but I want to do more in terms of supporting our community health centers, not just empowering them, but actually helping to grow the partnerships between them and hospitals. This, I think, will allow hospitals to adapt policies to properly accommodate changing populations in the state, such as the impoverished. So I want actually a you know, an ecosystem of the delivery of services that go from the most elite hospitals in the state, which we are incredibly grateful for having, to the community health centers, which are really at the forefront of the delivery of services to our underprovided communities.
You know, much of the emphasis in healthcare reform is on adult patients. Do you think there is a need for a specific focus on children's health?
Absolutely. I mean, I have three kids, 12, 10, and 8, and a couple things. I mean, one is, you know, vaccinations, flu vaccines, educating parents of the necessity of doing this. Educate, you know, it's about public education that people have to understand that the health and livelihood of our children is dependent on responsible behavior of other parents about their children. And I think as a mother, right, you keep them home, you make sure that they're vaccinated against harms, you teach them healthy living about drugs and alcohol. I mean, and I think as a parent, and if I were to be governor, I can speak really honestly about the challenges that that we need to address in our child population, right, which runs the gambit depending on what populations you're talking about. In addition, I mean, you know, it really is anyone who enters a system as a candidate, right? So that you're looking at a system that is a huge burden on us, on the state. We've got to begin to relieve that burden. And so healthy living for our children, you know, and you think about, you know, the numbers I've seen is 1 million teenagers enter emergency rooms a year nationally for just drug and alcohol abuse. If you think of the burdens on our healthcare system, a lot of that can be relieved by focusing on our children and them being healthier in the future and healthier, you know, healthier now so that they are healthier adults. Finally, and I'll just say this because this is a big issue for me. I am into risk reduction. That is what Homeland Security is about. And one of the risks that I see coming down our way is, of course, the challenge of climate change and what that's going to impact in our children's health. And we have to begin to really focus on climate change adaptation, because our kids who are outside, or increased asthma, access to healthy foods becomes harder if the weather's changing too much. I mean, just think about all the parts of healthy living that would be impacted by climate change. And I really do think that climate change is a public health issue, and that's why we need to begin to adapt to it as well for our children.
Juliet, you've been very patient in answering my specific questions that I have on healthcare. I'd like to give you an opportunity if there's anything that you'd like to add that we haven't covered so far.
No, I mean, I think, you know, I really appreciate this time, and you know, campaigns have a tendency to make us have like a healthcare policy and an education policy and then an employment policy and a criminal justice policy. And part of what I bring to this race in complex and crisis management in both state and federal government is a capacity to think about solving the problems of our time in a way that is very holistic, right? That we begin to view healthcare not as a separate issue reserved for the professionals, right, and the health businesses and the healthcare providers, but one that is intimately tied to education, our children, the delivery of health, you know, services through our infrastructure, that is tied to our economy and economic growth, because if we are healthy, businesses will want to come here. I mean, so while I appreciated all these questions and the opportunity to answer them, I mean, I think also part of what we need to do through the campaign, as well as a governor, is to help people understand how all these things are related as well, to build a sort of, you know, stronger, more prepared, and more resilient Massachusetts. And that's what I'm in the race for, so I appreciate the time.
Juliette Kayyem, candidate for governor, thank you very much.
Thank you.